Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the 7th day of March, 2010. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, just finished visiting with my friend Tim Spencer over here in the Ozarks where I live. And we got caught up on several topics, and he and I share the same concerns about this calendar year we're in, 2010, and the possibilities of some pretty serious matters taking place that would require preparedness to get through them. Tim, like myself, is a student of the Torah Code. It's also called the Bible Code, the synonyms. The Bible Code / Torah Code has some very serious things to say about 2010 in terms of both earthquakes, nuclear devices being set off in populated areas, World War III. it's a pretty serious list, and he and I suggest anybody else not rely completely on the Torah Code, but or the Bible Code, but incorporate it into the mix of the knowledge that you acquire from different sources on your own. And make your decision based on the information you get from all your sources. And thoughtful prayer can and should be a part of any decision-making process, especially if it involves major decisions such as relocating where you live, changing jobs, major purchases, things of that nature. Thoughtful prayer is a very, very good thing to do. No guest scheduled today. It's a live call-in show, 800-313-9443. I want to remind everybody that Republic Broadcasting is having a pledge drive, and you can donate Monday through Friday, 10 to 6 Central Time at 800-724-2719. First break coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th day of March, 2010. Well, I'm the first to admit I do not have a crystal ball. I sometimes jokingly say my crystal ball is a little cloudy. No, John Moore does not have a crystal ball, and I'm not a prophet. I'm just a man. I'm a private detective, homicide detective. Have been so for most of my adult life. Prior to that, I was in military intelligence for 3 years. Despite not being a prophet, I do have some contacts that keep me posted on things going on. Men I served with, military intelligence, men I worked with over these past 37 years as a homicide detective. They keep me abreast of important things, things that you're interested in, things that are literally life-changing events, shall we say. I keep in contact with these men by telephone and by email, and sometimes in person, like with my friend Tim Spencer today. And we share information. It's basically a private intelligence service is what it amounts to. Us old intelligence analysts, we have a network, I guess you could say, staying in touch. And you get the power of these brains, which are trained and disciplined brains, to find, organize, and analyze intelligence matters, we can come up with some pretty good conclusions. What we're coming up with for 2010 is not a pretty picture, in the general sense of the word. The Torah Code is one of many, many things we rely on. There's lots of open sources from the Department of Defense, various news sources. If you know what to look for, you can make sense out of them. That's what an intelligence analyst does. You know, our training as intelligence analysts is to take hundreds, possibly thousands of bits of information. Any one bit of information by itself is typically meaningless or has little meaning. Just like you may have seen, I don't know if they still make these things, paint-by-number things that people used to buy. It's a white canvas with a pale blue outline, whatever it might be, a picture of a horse or a mountain or a flower, and little numbers, little squares with little numbers telling the wannabe artist which color they should put in a particular little square, or a jigsaw puzzle. Most of the time, the majority of jigsaw puzzle pieces have very little meaning in and of themselves. Occasionally you'll find something that is very significant, but with a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, for example, most of those 1,000 pieces by themselves will be pretty meaningless. That's the nature of intelligence work, is to take all the bits that are meaningless by themselves, analyze them, and put them together in a sense that, in a way that makes sense, so that useful intelligence can be gathered from the hundreds or thousands of meaningless pieces of information. Well, I've been doing that now for 43 years. I graduated from military intelligence school 43 years ago this spring, around I guess it would have been late June, early July, something like that. I guess it was around, it was sometime, no, it was towards the end of July, excuse me. It was towards the end of July, 1967, 43 years ago. It's just when you do that, when you take formal training in that regard and perform that work for a couple of years, it just becomes part of who you are. Now, I could have made a direct transfer into the CIA as an intelligence analyst. I chose not to go that direction. In hindsight, I'm very glad that I did. Knowing myself as I do as a mature adult, looking back on myself as a 22-year-old, I know I would have gravitated towards covert ops, or what they call clandestine services. Of course, I would have gravitated that manner. Besides being a very bright guy, I'm very athletic and outgoing, and like to do physical things. Spending 20 years in an 8-by-8-foot cubicle would not have been my career path with the CIA if I'd gone that direction. And I'm really glad I didn't. I would have spent my adult life going to third world countries and basically beating up on the good guys for the most part. Typically, what the CIA was doing and still does is to make the world safe for international businesses. And I've come to know that many of the people they called communists and made into enemies really weren't communists. That was a fabrication. Of course, sometimes they were. But if they weren't going along with the program of international business and international bankers, they were shut out from American help, both in the private sector and in the public sector, shut out by Western Europeans in the same manner, leaving their only alternative for any financial help or help of any kind, banking help, the Eastern Bloc countries, giving them the appearance of being communist, even if they were not. And sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't. Anyway, 2010 is going to be a year where I think you'll see things that will take your breath away. Both in terms of earth changes, and here we're talking volcanism, seismic activity, weather-related events, and human-created events, which would be the possibility of nuclear devices being set off in American cities or elsewhere, the swine flu coming back as a bona fide killing biological weapon in late spring of this year, early to mid-spring, like it did last year, except this time be a real killer. Last year, it was pretty much a non-event. The people behind us are pure evil. Baxter International, these other pharmaceutical companies, they were caught red-handed in the process of distribution of swine flu vaccines that had live flu virus in it. That's well documented. That's not even debatable. And with the protocols put in place in these modern laboratories that deal with these kind of viruses, that can't happen by accident. It simply can't. The protocols are way too tight, and nothing is left to chance. It can't happen by accident. That's according to the people who work in these labs at the highest levels. It can't happen by accident. So, word to the wise, be working on your preparations now while you can. We have what appears to be the appearance of a luxury of time. We don't know how long that luxury of time will look like, how long it will be. It may be most of 2010, it may be only a few weeks. Tor Code is saying a major earthquake someplace unnamed in about 4 weeks, April the 12th. Will that happen? I don't know. One of the things about American culture and American people is the wanting to know dates, wanting to know specific dates when events are going to happen. It seems to be ingrained in us as Americans. It may be ingrained in Western culture in general. I don't know. Not that it matters. Chasing dates, looking for dates for events to happen, I regard as being normal in our society on one hand. On the other, I regard as being very harmful, because it appears that most people, most of the time, won't make serious preparations until they have about what they would think about a one-year time frame before an event would happen. And the events of what happened, the build-up to Y2K, is what I base this on. I was a radio talk show host at a local station in St. Louis at the time, a AM 24/7 talk radio station, WGNU 920 on the dial. And I spent a lot of time in 1998 and 1999 talking about preparedness, and on the radio and doing presentations and with people on the street and so forth. My observation of what I saw then is that almost nobody did anything before the 1st of January 1999. And the people that did anything during that calendar year of 99 typically didn't do a whole lot. We had people storing up some food, storing up some water. A few did get some communications equipment and medical supplies. A few also got firearms to defend their families with. I'm going to say that may have been, I know it was less than 25% of the population, first of all. It was not a huge percentage, a fairly substantial minority that did anything at all. And they did it with January 1st, 2000 in mind. Keeping in mind that all during 1998 and most of 97, we knew Y2K would be a problem, a man-made problem with a man-made solution. Now, with minor exceptions, there were some credit card companies. I know the St. Louis County Police bought a brand new radio system that did not work when they turned it on the 1st of January 2000. I'm sure there were similar problems around the country with computer-related equipment. It was a man-made problem. It did have a man-made solution, and that solution was probably 95% achieved. Break coming up. Stay tuned. The call number is 800-313-9443.
John Moore on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th of March, 2010. I'm just reading a news article here on the Republic website. byline by Tom Deamer. The title of the article is Rove, that's as in Karl Rove, President George W. Bush's political architect, in a new memoir, a new book. Rove admits Iraq weapons of mass destruction, admits bogus Iraq weapons of mass destruction led to invasion. And he claims here that President Bush did not know that the information about the weapons of mass destruction was false. Well, I don't believe it. I'm sitting out here 100 miles from the nearest city in the Ozarks, 45-minute drive to the nearest red, yellow, and green traffic signal. And I knew that the information was false. I knew it. Why didn't the President of the United States know it? Good question. There was a former Marine Corps major who had the job of going any place he wanted in Iraq to look for weapons of mass destruction, in particular a nuclear weapons program. Now, you can't have a nuclear weapons program inside a two-car garage or a 5,000-square-foot warehouse. It takes very large, very sophisticated facilities that consume lots of electricity, which is one of the things you look for, the consumption of electricity. And he never found anything. He never found any nuclear weapons program. The joint resolution authorizing the president to use force, I carry copies of it with me. It listed 17, 18 different whereases. It's clear to any mature adult reading the joint resolution that the main concern of the United States Congress was the alleged nuclear weapons program of Saddam Hussein, which did not exist. Now, Saddam did have chemical and biological weapons, which are classified as weapons of mass destruction by international bodies, chemical and biological weapons that were given to him by the United States government. So, of course, he had those things. We gave them to him. He was our ally fighting Iran. Of course he had those weapons. That was well known and well established, but that's not why the joint resolution of Congress was passed. It was because of chemical and biological weapons. It was passed because of the non-existent nuclear weapons program. It's time for a price to be paid. General Powell, who a man who I respect very much, was given a false evidence that he presented to the United Nations in New York City, false evidence, lies that he thought was truthful, that he presented to the United Nations, asking the United Nations to act on it. You notice he didn't stick around too long after that. General Powell is not the kind of man you give a portfolio full of lies and have him make a fool of himself in front of the entire world at the United Nations, which is exactly what they did. He was Secretary of State at the time. They took advantage of this man. They took advantage of his honesty and integrity. They knew he was a trusted man with a lot of integrity. That's why they sent him to the United Nations with his pack of lies to do this presentation. Well, it's time for indictments. Unlike World War II and Pearl Harbor, which there should have been indictments there, including the President of the United States, who knew that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked well in advance, thanks to Winston Churchill giving him a heads up. The President of the United States should have been indicted at that point in time, but it was covered up and now all the players are dead. It's not too late this time. The players are still alive. They should be indicted and prosecuted by a U.S. attorney in New York City or Washington, D.C., and charged with treason. That's what should happen. Anyway, you heard a message a moment ago from my friend Freeze Dry Guy. He continues to do innovative, cutting-edge things with his long-term storage programs that he offers. For $5 a month, you get a very nice across-the-board discount with his Buyers Club. He has four different pay-as-you-go clubs. Three of them offer a different variety of food every month, and ranging from one case a month to several cases a month at a fixed price. You know, well, it's not a fixed price. It'll vary slightly every month. Shipping included to your door. And, of course, a protein club, which is protein meals delivered to your door also for about $100 a month. You can get the details from him calling his toll-free number, 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. You can find out about his March special also at the website, freezedryguy.com. And there's a link from my website, thelibertyman.com. We do have some callers on hold, and we'll get right to the callers. Eric in Michigan. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Well, you brought up 9/11, which you did.
Oh, we got a break. Eric, I'm sorry, we got a break. Hold on, everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, Ken. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th day of March, 2010. And on hold, we've got Eric from Michigan with a couple of comments. Go ahead, Eric.
JFK had planned to disband the Central Insurrection Agency into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the four winds. I think that's what needs to be done today more than ever. We need to get the U.S. Mercenary military out of the 130-plus countries they're occupying. That's a direct violation of the federal charter. We need to secure our borders. We need to start holding grassroots de jure common law grand juries, because the Bar Esquire attorney thugs, whose allegiance is to the Bank of England and the monarchy, etc., they're primarily responsible for orchestrating, conducting all of this skullduggery. So, we got a lot of work to do.
And I agree with Eric. We got a lot of work to do, and we need to move on here. But I thank you very much for your call, sir. And we've got Patrick in Arkansas. Go ahead, Patrick.
Ed, and we've been listening to your program for a couple of months, and find it very informative. This is more or less like a regional thing. You know, here in the Ozarks, we don't bury our water lines too deep. But I have friends in 25 miles away in each direction, 30 miles, and we've been noticing a lot of water line breaks, and one of my friends suggested it might be a little tremors under the earth. What do you think about that?
Well, it depends what kind of pipes are we talking here.
We're just plain PVC for water lines.
Well, PVC should be able to take somewhat of a shake.
Our weather's been 55, 65.
I grew up around, you know, doing plumbing with my dad. What is the frost line in your part of the country?
These pipes are only buried maybe a foot deep.
Yeah, that's about right. I'm still in the Ozarks. It's about 18 inches where I am.
Yeah, we're in the Ozarks too.
Yeah. Well, it's a large area, and you get another 200 miles south of where I am, you're still in the Ozarks, but your frost line typically is not more than 12 inches deep.
Yes,
that's a good question, Patrick, and I really don't know the answer.
You know what's strange is because we had a pretty cold, a couple of cold snaps, and now it's been like 55, 65 degrees nearly every day, and that's when everybody's getting the breaks.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of strange.
It is, and these are home lines
home lines or farm lines, you know, like the spring boxes that feed the cattle and stuff like that, basic, you know, residential lines.
Well, a plumber working on these lines might have a better idea what's causing the break. I certainly can't analyze them from up where I am.
Sure. And I noticed, like, we have a little house that's like 1,850 feet above sea level up here in the Ozarks on a ridgeline in the mountains.
Right.
And it's reasonable. But the banks, I know in this region, they've just turned off the faucet. No one can get a loan for anything.
Of course, they sell a home. All over the country. Unless you've got a substantial down payment, these banks are scared. They're very fearful. And they're not loaning money because of it.
I just want to add one last thing, John, that we should always keep in mind, and maybe it's something, just some thought for the mind. When the Lord said, it's not by power or by might, but by spirit, saith the Lord.
Absolutely.
Okay, praise the Lord. Bless you, brother.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
And from Utah, we got JG in Utah. Go ahead, sir, or ma'am. I don't know who this is. JG.
Yeah, hi, John. It's from California.
Okay.
John, I just want to thank you on behalf of all of our people. Thank you for being there for us. I just can't express the gratitude. You know, whether it's you or another guy, you're the one that's there in the driver's seat for your part of this. And I thank God every day to bless all you guys, because whether you like it or not, you're a hero of mine.
Well, thank you, sir.
I don't say that lightly at all. And
I can tell by the tone of your voice you don't, no.
No, I don't get broken up too well, too much during the year, but here and there, as I have a friend that I was discussing what's going on in the world over the past 150 years, what it's all about, and he's a disabled vet like I am.
Right.
And we talked about it, and I completely broke down. And just listening to you go over the slight history, I have a couple of comments, what I'm trying to purport to you infer. And that's, I love listening to you guys, whether it's Greg Evenson, Jack McLam, Pastor Butch, all of you discuss the how and the who, when, where, when, and whys of and it's just devastating to think that we could have allowed this to be blinded by the good, or, you know, by good and evil.
Well, we have
to
deal with the consequences, don't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
My point about all this is the two comments that I really called about. As I say, it's just, you know, to say the least, tears come easy when you talk about your child. How much when you're, I guess I should say, when you're a father and you love something that much, it's extremely hard to deal with. And my point is that I guess when you think about the things that we've allowed, or for the men that are getting ready to stand up, as Sam Kennedy is doing, you know, you fear. And I wanted your take on this, because as I've reported to many of you, that you take the chemtrails, John, coming out of the back of an airplane with the particulates of whatever metals, and we're breathing this and running it by our doctors, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Dr. Carley and Dr. Truott and whatever, you know, they've got going to help us try to survive this anomalies and this sin. Is that, to me, that's called premeditated murder. And as you were discussing before about FDR, he knew ahead of time. And you say these movers and shakers are living today. And as I've discussed with Jack McLam over the years, you know, we've got the people, the prosecutors, the engineer. I've been waiting for, and of course, none of us want to exercise our index fingers, I've told you before. But what do you think about this, John, when you guys make statements like, oh, gee, you know, they could possibly enlist 5 or 6 nuclear bombs, or as I say, I call it premeditated murder as a nation, John. What kind of men are we? Not that we want to stand up now. There's no wrong time to stand up, but a lot of us are not ready emotionally, much less, you know, like you say, people in California, they haven't prepared for earthquakes in decades, and they never will until it hits their child or their pocketbook. But why are we to wait, John, for like what you proposed or discussed about that thing about the nuclear cities? Is like being in a bathroom with a hand grenade pulled, the pin, and then, you know, the guy with the pin says, okay, try to get out of here, and he drops the grenade, John. What are we waiting for? Are we that damn stupid of a nation to wait for these movers and shakers, whether it be, you know, George Bush or Cheney or the Lord Rothschild, you know, and see pictures of Schwarzenegger, Hobnob?
I think I got the gist of your question here, J.J.
Yeah, John, what about it?
Let me go ahead and address your question here, okay?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, I people who want to be politically active, I wish them the best, and pray that they'll be successful. I've been involved in conservative politics for more than 20 years, and I know what people are up against. I've watched these cycles, these congressional cycles, and elections, and knowing what I know, I don't participate in politics at that level anymore. If I thought it would do any good, I would. And if you still think it can, ladies and gentlemen, God bless you, go for it. My focus is primarily at the county level. If there's anything to do politically, to involve yourself at the county level and get a good sheriff elected who understands the Constitution and understands his or her authority as the highest law enforcement official whose authority exceeds any federal agency, FBI, ATF, or any of the others, cannot conduct business in his county or her county without the authority of the sheriff. And they have to understand that and do the right thing. Otherwise, I suggest people work on preparedness for their families and themselves for these hard times. Focus on getting the skills, getting the equipment, getting the supplies, and doing what needs to be done to protect your loved ones. So that's about it in a nutshell there, JG.
I can't see waiting, John, without, waiting, not so much that I can't appreciate what Sam Kitty's getting ready to do, but as I say, a lot of the people I've talked to, a couple of state coordinators of his groups, they're sure the military, I don't know how you feel about this, have you listened to their shows where they say they have the Navy SEALs behind them, John? Do you really believe that, John?
The Navy SEALs will not do anything as a group. Individual Navy SEALs are going to do what they're going to do. There's no guarantee that any group of men and women in the military will do anything as a group. They're all individuals. They all have their individual feelings. They have their understanding of their oath of office that they took. And my belief is the majority of them will do the right thing at the right time.
And you really believe that?
I do. I know that the New World Order does not trust the U.S. military to do what they want them to. I know there's still about 1,000 or so Vietnam vets on active duty with the military, and they're very fearful of these men. I know that for a fact. I found out from private sources. They regard the Vietnam vets, both in and out of the military, as the last true warriors who will do the right thing at the right time.
Our generation.
So, I don't know what else to say right now, JG, except pray without end and get your preparations going.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we've got Art in Ohio. Go ahead, Art.
Hello, John.
Yes, sir.
I take it by what I'm hearing, you're supporting Sam's plan?
Say again, supporting who?
Sam's plan, Restore America plan.
Quite frankly, I'm not all that familiar with it. But you want to bring us up to speed on what the plan is?
Well, it's as two callers ago said, setting up the du jour grand juries.
Whoa, before you go any further, I didn't comment on that, but I'm going to now. These common law grand juries, here's what I've told these folks in the past. You're keeping in mind, I'm a legal assistant by education.
Okay.
If your grand jury's going to issue any orders, shall we say, the person who would be enforcing these orders would be the county sheriff. If the county sheriff recognizes the authority of a common law grand jury, then you have a bona fide common law grand jury that can actually do something. If the county sheriff does not recognize the orders of the common law grand jury, then basically you may as well be watching a professional football game because you're not going to accomplish anything.
I agree with you.
That's what it comes down to, and I'm not aware. There may be, there's I believe 3,500 county sheriffs in the United States. I'm not aware of a single one who's recognized the authority of a common law grand jury yet. Now, if there has been, I'm simply not aware of it.
Well, I'm not privy to all the pieces of the puzzle of this plan, but I think it was the first night he announced it, he said they did have a plan to get the county sheriffs on board. I don't know what that is.
Well, I don't either, Art, but without that, you may as well go to the bowling alley, because what's the point of having a grand jury if the orders of the grand jury can't and won't be enforced?
Well, I was assuming that was part of what the military and I say suppose it, because once again, I don't know these things to be absolute facts, is supposed to be about. But he did say on his first show, announcing it, he did have a plan to bring the county sheriffs on board.
Well, then that's the right thing. In the absence of that, it's hopeless. So I guess we'll see what happens there, won't we?
Yes, we sure will.
Okay. Is that it, Art?
Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot.
We appreciate it. Sheldon, my friend Sheldon in Arizona, beautiful downtown Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, it's beautiful here, John. We're having a monsoon-type storm right now, strong winds and strong rain.
No kidding.
Yeah, this is really, it seems kind of weird.
We had a sunny, warm day here in the Ozarks all day today.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to give you a plug. You're going to have a double whammy for interviews tonight on radio.
Please do. Go ahead.
You're going to be on Jim Arthur Yontzik's show out of Chicago from 8 to 10 p.m. Mountain Time. And then Richard Serrett's The Conspiracy Show, which is a 50,000-watt AM clear channel station, which touches about a third or a quarter of the United States from 9 to 10 p.m. Mountain. I thought I'd give you a plug there.
Well, we appreciate that. Yep.
And I have an update on the NASA Prudential Relocation Services contract. I got an email from the lady down in Mississippi on Wednesday of this week. They were requesting to know what media group I represent and an extension of time that Prudential is seeking now. So it sounds like you're trying to figure out how they're going to send this to me.
Yeah, I do have a correction. The first show out of Chicago was 8 to 9 Mountain Time. We did get that squared away. So I won't be on two radio shows at the same time, thank goodness.
Is that Central? Is that Central?
Mountain Time. Since you use Mountain Time, I use Mountain Time also. 8 to 9 Mountain, right.
Okay, gotcha. And what were you going to say about NASA?
Oh, I don't know. Prudential's doing their due diligence and their redaction right now, correct?
Yeah, the lady told me on the phone initially it would take 30 to 45 days probably, and now I got this follow-up email that they're requiring Prudential is seeking an extension of time.
Well, so it could be a couple of months easy.
Yeah, okay. You know, then all of a sudden, John, we get this this Congress introduces this bill last week that they might extend the shuttle flights. You think that's just a cover?
Oh, if not necessarily. I mean, I don't know. Nobody outside of NASA really knows what they do when they're up there. They may still be visiting the Black Knight for all we know. I don't know how much work there is to do to recover what's inside that 40-by-70-foot box up there called the Black Knight. And they've probably had access to it for more than 30 years, going back to maybe even as early as 1969. So they could be doing that. They could be doing other things, working on space-based weapons. It's hard to say. Maybe the engineers have figured out a way to make these shuttles safe for a few more flights. They're really getting pretty old, a little bit long in the tooth there.
Yeah, they've been flying since April 12th, 1981.
Yeah, that's. I doubt that the original specifications called for them to have a 30-year life, which they would be in their 30th year now. That's pretty incredible. In my neighborhood here, we had an F-15 flying along on a training mission about a year ago, and one of the wings just fell off the darn thing.
Is that right?
I was talking to a Boeing engineer. He says, John, we never thought these things would be flying more than 15 years, and here they are pushing 30 years old. You know?
Yeah, it's really something. The other thing, last thing I wanted to ask you is I meant to ask you this privately on the phone the other day, but I got cut off when I was driving them.
Yeah. You want to hold on through the break, Sheldon? We have a break.
Yeah.
Everybody hold on, and we'll see you right back. Stay tuned.
Got an inside corner on the truth, thanks to John Moore and the Republic Broadcasting Network. To talk to John Moore live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th of March. And, Sheldon, you got one more question real quick.
Hey, John. Yes, yeah, sir. I just wanted to follow up with that comment. I listen to Professor Jim McCanny shows weekly, and he doesn't seem to be talking about the imminent arrival of wormwood as compared to the way you are. Why is that?
Well, like I said off the air, first of all, I don't speak for James McCanny. He's a friend of mine, and I wouldn't pretend to represent him or speak on his behalf. I would never do so. I have read his books, and I talked to Jim many times. Jim has given the entire planet warning by virtue of his books and previous radio shows. Jim does not name dates, and he's never done that. I don't believe he'll, if he has a date, maybe he would give it to us, but he doesn't have a date. My message is a bit different. His focus is more scientific matters and mathematics and things. You know, he's a college professor. My message is more about preparedness in general, not just to do with wormwood, but to do with a collapse of our society due to economic collapse or World War III, whatever it might be. I have a more general message to dealing with preparedness, and the message is: get ready. Get ready now, because we simply don't know how much time we have. We really don't.
Well, I agree with you there about giving dates. Bill Cooper educated me on that. The people that give out exact dates are probably totally wrong, so I do agree with you on that part.
Right. And we're just about to the top of the hour here, but Sheldon, as always, we appreciate your call.
Have a good day, John.
Thank you, sir. Roger, if you've got a quick question, we'll take it, and we might have to hold over. Go ahead. Roger from Indiana. Turn down your radio. Roger, turn down your radio. Okay, is Roger there?
Oh, sorry. Oh, did you call me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air, Roger.
Oh, boy. I had it up to listen to you. I wanted to say, John, is that I believe I've been at it for a little bit here, you know, for quite some time actually, but I agree with what your statements were earlier about it is local. And I've been starting to learn that the county sheriffs do have the power because it's bottom line.
That's right.
Nobody's going to feed the principle of it's really we the people from county. It's sheriffs to protect we the people there. And it goes so forth in the same sense as that we're all the bosses to the higher they get, the more they're accountable. And preparing, too, you mentioned. I've been learning about grains, the proteins, and things like that, how to preserve them in the raw, whole sense.
That's right.
And how to hide them and so forth. I learned also in survival also what I read a book on, okay? I'm no expert as anybody in military. I've never been in the military, but I'm old enough, but I know people and the whole sort on that. And I, you learn a lot. And I know whatever. I'll go on. But anyhow, preparing with how to preserve it for 100 years, things like that. But I also learned in that sense in that book is that you want to find a group of 3,500 to 5,000 people. You're small enough to unite, but not too big to be divided, let's say, and hold off any rushes to any, you know, like the big cities. You want to stay 500 miles away, 350, like Chicago's, New York's, things like that, and 350 away from...
We're at the break. You want to hold on through the break, Roger?
Sure.
Hold on. We got a break coming up. Call number's 800-313-9443. Stay tuned. All right, we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th day of March, 2010. Welcome back to the John Moore Show. We have a caller in hold here. Roger, you still there, Roger?
Yes, I am.
Okay, continue where we left off, please.
Yeah, So I believe in the small communities, and what I've learned is that you want, well, I don't want to get into details of this, but it is the smaller communities. And if we can speak to people as individuals, make it simple, make it easy, because people get pretty bored on, you know, but put out flyers educate people, because I've learned that the way we're being taken over is through ignorance. We have young children through the school systems, from government brainwashing to conditioning where parents can't spank children. I mean, and we're not talking about beating a child. We're talking about correcting him.
Right.
You know, and, you know, proper things that are morally right. And even God, you know. But anyhow, we have to go from there and, you know, learn how to prepare. So educate. And what I've been thinking recently here, I really want to put some flyers out there, some good, proper flyers. And I like to add that thought out to people, those that do know what they're talking about in a proper sense, just put some flyers out there. I don't know, put them out there, hang them out there, and educate people in their rights and what should be understood as America and our freedom, and people standing up and with God's word. And really, that's my whole thought about
okay.
here because...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
in response to that.
Well, if you think that will do be some benefit, Roger, then that's exactly what you should do.
Well, I'm just saying, as we learn all this information and not be ignorant is all actually what I'm trying to say, and that's, you know.
Okay.
Anyhow.
Well, great. Well, thank you for your call. We appreciate it, Roger. Yeah, everybody needs to do what is best for them. There's no one size fits all. And this is our first break of the hour. Call in numbers 800-313-9443. Stay tuned. John, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th of March, 2010. And let's see. Is Roger still there? Okay. Roger's gone. Thank you very much. And we're talking about preparedness today and other related topics. One plays into the other, of course. I was just reading an article on Republic's website during the break about exceptional numbers of birth defects in Iraq in the town called Fallujah, most likely from depleted uranium rounds that the United States has been using. Depleted uranium makes a very heavy projectile for penetrating armor. It's cheaper than tungsten because it's basically waste. And when it hits a target, like a armor, or it hits any kind of target, it could be hitting a stone building. They have a lot of stone buildings in Iraq and concrete block buildings. It becomes a talcum powder like substance that easily is spread by the wind and gets in with the dust, and pregnant mothers breathe the stuff in and it causes birth defects. It's also causing horrendous problems for American service people who've been over there breathing this stuff as well, in the form of cancers and other health-related problems. What we're doing to ourselves, what we're doing to innocents, is criminal, quite frankly. Invading a country at peace, Iraq was a country at peace, posed no threat whatsoever to the security interests of the United States of America, and we invaded a country at peace. That's clearly a violation of international law. They attempted to get international sanction for this. They got it to their satisfaction, based on fabricated evidence. All right. Anyway, the call number is 800-313-9443. I was talking to my gunsmith earlier today, and he was giving me a heads up on a Ruger 308 rifle that he's building for himself. I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it. It sounds like a really neat little carbine with a 16-inch barrel. He's going to have some nice optics on it, and he's really a craftsman and does excellent work, and I give out his business cards to all my concealed carry students. I think we're going to be seeing more interest in concealed carry this calendar year. Ammunition supplies are getting back up to where they should be. although as my gunsmith was talking about this morning, it is considerably more expensive, on the order of 100 to 200% more expensive than it was not too long ago. A lot of upward pressure on the pricing of all metals, brass and lead included. That's the way it is. If you want ammunition, you're going to have to pay the price. That's simply the nature of the beast. We've got a regular caller here, Steve from Texas. Go ahead, Steve.
Hello, Don?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
You think ammo's hard to get? Try to get reloading supplies.
Well, I heard primers were sharp, but that they're easy to get now. What's the story on reloading equipment?
In my area, bullets are probably the hardest thing. Powder's not too bad. Primers are not bad. But I'd say probably, you know, bullets in the 45, 38 special, 9mm, you know, the more popular rounds are pretty hard to get.
I understand. Did you try Midway?
No, I haven't tried them yet, but I probably will. But on that rifle your gunsmith was talking about, I've seen some of those carbines. I think it's a Hawkeye. Real nice looking short carbine, very light.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it is.
Yeah.
Of course, when you get a heavy caliber like a 308 and a light carbine, your shoulder's going to pay the price for that, isn't it?
Oh yeah, you just gotta hold tight. That's all.
that's exactly it. Otherwise, it's going to slam against your shoulder like a sledgehammer.
Yes. But my question was, last week's show was, I would say, to say the least, interesting.
Well, it's been interesting, guest. But go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that you're talking about in Norway, or I think it was not Norway but Greenland, the piece of metal. How big was that piece of metal, and why aren't the why haven't we heard this on regular CNN news and stuff that's melting the ice up there?
Well, I can't speak for CNN, obviously. The object talked about, I looked at it on Google Earth, and anybody can do this. Most of my information is secondhand and not verified by independent sources. I don't know what this object is. There's clearly something about if you start your search on Google Earth at the very bottom, southern tip of Greenland, and go straight north about one quarter of the way up, it's right there. It's so large you can't miss it on the satellite images. I don't know what it is, quite frankly. It may be a metal object, or maybe a rock. I don't know what this thing is.
But it's definitely melting the ice around it.
Well, it's clearly a very dark color against the ice and snow. And I doubt that somebody put out a bunch of charcoal briquettes on the ice. I mean, Greenland's not an easy place to get to, especially in the interior of the country. So maybe we'll learn more about it, maybe not. I hate to speculate in public on the radio about what it might be, but anybody with internet access can go to Google Earth and look at it themselves and reach whatever conclusion you reach.
Yeah, I was going to say I saw your bike. I was able to get to a computer, and I saw your fold-up bike, and that thing looks pretty good. I really like it.
It's tough. Yeah, that's a paratrooper bicycle. That's what the Army and the Marines use in Iraq and Afghanistan. These military bases, Steve, are massive, and your typical GI doesn't have access to a motor vehicle overseas, especially.
Yeah. When I was in Killeen, I lived near Killeen for a while, and Fort Hood, and some of the facilities there on the base were so large that bicycle was real handy. A lot of those guys told me
it is.
What I like about it, it looks like a regular bike. It doesn't look like something that the clowns ride in, you know, on the
with the little
in
wheels.
The circus.
Most of these fold up mountain bikes have very small wheels. You're right, and it really does compromise the off road capability tremendously.
Yeah. I thought it was a great looking bike, and I'm going to have to save my pennies. I'm definitely going to try and get one.
Well, great. I'm sure you'd get a lot of use out of it there, Steve.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for your call. And that was Steve from Texas. What he's referring to, ladies and gentlemen, is a paratrooper bicycle. It's on my website, thelibertyman.com. I take some time to find equipment and books that will be helpful for you. And the paratrooper bicycle is an excellent piece of equipment. It is mil-spec. It is what the U.S. It's an all-aluminum, all-welded frame. It folds up into a package 12 inches by 28 inches by 36 inches. Specifically designed for paratroopers to jump out the back of C-130s with in a nylon case that they use. And it's tough, and it's reliable. It's a far better plan B for transportation than your boots. So if you've got a bug-out vehicle, that's where it should be, is in the back of your bug-out vehicle. It's so compact, it'll fit in the back seat of a Volkswagen. Try that with a standard mountain bike. Every other fold-up mountain bike I've seen has reduced-size wheels, which certainly compromises any off-road capability you would have. That's there at my website, along with some interesting books you won't find other places, like Six Ways In, 12 Ways Out. I got a fresh case coming probably later this week. Towards the end of the week, I expect a fresh case in. A communications book, my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. That's all there at my website. And I do have a toll-free 24-hour, 7-day a week order line. That's 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. A lot of the people listening to the John Moore Show are interested in having their own electricity at their home, ranch, or farm. And once you start figuring out what you need, you'll figure out that a really comprehensive system will have a bank of batteries, or at least one, or possibly one large battery, that can power your house for 23 hours or longer, and you recharge that battery once a day for about an hour. The missing link in doing that has always been, the problem with doing that has always been lead-acid batteries that will last anywhere from 8 to 12 years if properly maintained. The Edison batteries, the nickel-iron alkaline batteries that Brixolot is offering up there in KT Ordnance, that's the solution to the problem. Rick recently got his hands on some 80-year-old original Edison batteries manufactured by the Edison Company. Thomas Edison was still alive, 1928, 80 years ago, 82 years ago. He cut them open, and what did he find inside? The nickel iron plates look like they just came from the factory. Pristine, brand new condition. 80-year-old batteries. If you go to the Edison Museum tomorrow morning, March 8th, you can see Edison batteries that have been in continuous charge-discharge cycles for more than a century, still working. We really don't know how long these last. You can get the details from Rick at his telephone number, 406-834-3611. He's on Mountain Time. I'd call him about mid-morning Mountain Time tomorrow, 406-834-3611. His website to deal with these matters is ZapWorks. ZAPP, ZapWorks.com. Stay tuned, we got a call on hold. We'll be right back.
John Moore is as close as your telephone. Call him right now. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th day of March, 2010. We got a couple of calls on hold. Mike from Kentucky. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, one possibility for a power supply that you could come up with, if, especially if you know anybody that works for Echelon, I mean the phone company, there's a lot of these old central office power supplies where you can have banks or arrays of batteries configured in 48 volts, and then you can, you know, plug in your power inverters off of those. But those are typically designed to run all that phone equipment for, I think, 72 hours or something, so you can have...
You're right, Mike. Those are usually what you run into there are lead acid batteries.
Yeah, I can imagine though with these nickel, like you're talking, that it'd be certainly better than, you know, just your commercially available deep cycle marine batteries.
Oh yeah, yeah,
way better.
A good up until we had our access to these Edison batteries, what the good systems had were golf cart batteries. These really large, heavy batteries. They cost $300 to $500 a piece.
Well, I've seen some that the government's probably paid way more than that for. They're in a like a clear plexiglass case, yep. And they're horizontal. They fit in equipment racks in these Kentucky early warning systems from years ago. I saw those.
Yep.
You can see the plates. It doesn't look like they're made out of lead, but they're like really long, like 20 inches or something at least,
yep.
And are clear.
Yep. You're right. There's no Edison batteries being manufactured in the United States at the moment. They're currently being manufactured in China, and they're good quality commercial batteries. But the one battery company that manufacturer that Mr. Salata was talking to, they made a corporate decision not to manufacture Edison batteries for the following reason: no repeat business.
Once you saturate the market, then aside from a Carrington event, boom, you know, blowing up the batteries.
That's right.
And I have to wonder about that, too. Once you charge some of these batteries, it would probably behoove you to have a second set on the shelf somewhere in storage just in case we do have a Carrington event, because the sunspots are apparently all over the map.
It's going to get worse, Mike. You're right. They are going to get much worse.
Well, it's an eventuality. I mean, it happened in what, 1921 and in 1859?
Right. The 1859 event, they didn't have much electronics then. And actually, in the 20s, not much either in the current sense of the word. And
it actually blew up the telegraph offices. Some of them caught on fire and stuff.
That's right.
Well, somebody just walked in my office door. I got to go. So.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. And we've got Rose from Virginia. Go ahead, Rose.
Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to ask you a few questions. My husband and I, we got this book, Strategic Relocation, because we're looking in eventually to relocate. And I was looking at some of the information, and something that I was impressed by was the Ozarks in terms of... I have a question. How is the seismic activity in that area, being so close to the New Madrid Fault?
Right. Well, the New Madrid Fault is, as far as the geological area, it's not really part of the Ozarks. It's at the extreme eastern edge of the Ozarks. The kind of rock we have here, Rose, unfortunately transmits energy very efficiently. Those of us who know about the New Madrid and live down here, we know we'll take damage, and possibly some very serious damage in terms of the power grid, water lines, bridges, roads, buildings. We know that, and it's a fact of life down here. The farther west you are from New Madrid, the less problem it's going to be. You could still be in the Ozarks, Rose, and be more than 200 miles away from the New Madrid seismic zone. The New Madrid is right on the Mississippi River. And the Ozarks extend all the way into extreme northwest Oklahoma. So it's possible to be in the northwest corner of Oklahoma or the northeast corner of Oklahoma or northwest corner of Arkansas, still be in the Ozarks and be a fairly comfortable distance from the New Madrid seismic zone, far enough away that the likelihood of great damage would be pretty minimal. So you're right. Your thinking is right, Rose, and being a good distance from the New Madrid seismic zone would be a smart thing to do.
Yeah. Another question I have, can tornadoes form in the mountains?
We have tornadoes in Missouri and Arkansas both, and they've always done that. Not as bad as Kansas and some other places, but we still get tornadoes. If you got a basement or a storm shelter, it's typically what people have to seek shelter from a tornado or a very severe thunderstorm. That's part of living in this part of the country also. The percentage chance of being hit by a tornado is pretty tiny, but it is a chance.
Yeah, and then I wanted to mention, you know, I have been hearing lately about, I don't know if you heard about President Obama, that he made an executive order giving jurisdiction, I think it was South Dakota, to the Native Americans. And it's something that if you can do some more research about this, and it's not only that, it's just giving more jurisdiction to the Native American nation.
Yeah, do you want to hold on through the break, Rose?
Yes, sir.
Okay, hold on. We got a break coming up. Everybody stay tuned. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 7th of March, 2010. For you new listeners out there, my name is John Moore. I am a working homicide detective, private investigator in my 37th year of investigating homicides and civil matters. Formerly with U.S. Military Intelligence, Vietnam veteran. All my information, my bio, my photographs at my website, thelibertyman.com, along with my newest video, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. Quick message here from Freeze Dry Guy before we get back to Rose. If you want the best and highest quality freeze-dried food at the best price, shipping included, he's the guy you want to talk to. Freeze Dry Guy. Some other things he has at his website you'll find helpful for preparedness as well. Some interesting articles. Freeze Dry Guy and I share a common military heritage. We were both in the 12th Special Forces Group, Airborne, back in the 70s. But as I tell him, and he refuses to believe it, I danced with prettier girls at Fort Bragg than he did. His toll-free number is 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. Rose, are you still there, my dear? Okay, go
yeah.
ahead.
No, that I said that I heard of President Obama signing an executive order where he gave, I think it was South Dakota, back to the Indian Nation. And then I have been hearing, too, about him, about this administration in general, giving more jurisdiction to the Indian Nations, you know. And I know there is a strategy behind that. And, you know, please, you know, I urge the audience to get involved, you know, about this with their senators.
Where do you think that should be going, Rose, all that mess?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
I'm just asking you an opinion.
Okay, well, I'll answer that off the air, and thank you
and
for your
call. And then I wanted to ask you this.
Oh, go ahead.
In terms of, I did go to the website of this business in Montana. They sell the Edison batteries.
Right.
Okay, what size do you recommend, you know, for an average family?
Well, if you want to run everything, your water well, your pump for your water, and have your refrigerator, you may have a refrigerator and a freezer, and, of course, lights and communications equipment. The 1,000-amp-hour battery should run your house from anywhere from 1 to 3 days before it needs to be recharged. Now, they have smaller batteries if your budget's tighter and you can't afford the 1,000-amp-hour battery. They have smaller batteries that may just help you get by. And you know, the two most important things would be your water well, your refrigeration, and communications equipment. And you may need a smaller battery. You're going to have to recharge it more frequently. But if you talk to Rick, he can give you the details, Rose.
I'm going to call again to see. I greatly appreciate your information and your help. You know, thank you.
You're welcome, Rose. Thank you. And we've got Jason in Oregon. Go ahead, Jason.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
If you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit more about Edison batteries.
Please do.
Okay. Well, here's my situation. I recently moved up from L.A. to Oregon, pretty much in the middle of nowhere. We bought this house, but we own it outright, and it's already off-grid and came with batteries and the solar setup.
Right.
And, of course, right now it has lead-acid batteries. We have about 1,000 amp-hours, And, well, when I first got it, it was in pretty sad condition, the batteries, but I did manage to recondition them, though it's pretty hard to... Each battery is like 125 pounds, a haul it, dump it, and we were able to put a chemical in it to recondition it. But and it's working good now.
I can help you with that, too, Jason, but go ahead.
Uh-huh. But yeah, it would be nice to have a battery where you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
But my understanding with the Edison batteries is that they are a little less efficient, meaning you have to put more energy in them to charge them, but just more solar panels, and it's not a big deal.
Right. Making electricity is fairly easy, and there's lots of different ways to do it. And would you agree that the weak link has always been these very expensive lead-acid batteries that eventually become scrap metal?
Oh, I mean, it's definitely the thing I'm spending the most time, you know.
Let me help you out. I can help you out with your lead acid batteries also.
Okay.
Are you familiar with it? I don't sell this stuff, but I'll help you get to where you need to be. Have you heard of a company called Pulse Tech?
Nope.
Okay, it's Pulse Tech, T-E-C-H.
Okay.
They make a couple of devices. You may want to borrow or rent one, and you probably want to buy the others. Pulse Tech makes devices that will, well, first of all, we need to explain to you and the audience, the reason lead-acid batteries go bad is the sulfur builds up on the lead plates, correct?
Correct.
Okay. They make a device that sends a reverse charge into the batteries and knocks that stuff off. It makes your lead-acid batteries last at least twice as long, maybe three times as long.
Okay.
In addition, they make another device that will recondition the battery. It's an electric device, and they're fairly pricey, $300 to $500, and typically a Pulse Tech distributor will have one and can make arrangements for you to have access to it. Maybe they may recondition the batteries for you.
Okay.
But get a hold of Pulse Tech. Find a distributor in your area. I use Pulse Tech devices in all my motor vehicles, my cars, and my lead-acid batteries last at least twice as long as normal because
okay,
of it.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds easier than the way I did it. Chemically.
Well, whatever works, but you may get more satisfaction going the route that Pulse Tech would offer for you.
Yeah. And to answer the last caller's question, our wells, I have to use a gasoline generator right now, which I'm gonna get more panels and switch it over. But we use about 2 to 250 amp hours a day, just with running normal lights, our computer and internet, and washing clothes with a washer and dryer, things like that.
What about a well pump and refrigeration?
Well, right now the well pump is a gasoline generator. I'm going to get a transformer to convert that over once I get more panels, because my panels right now aren't enough to completely charge my battery bank.
How big is your gas genset?
It's a Honda 6500.
Okay. I would check with Honda, the Honda dealer, your local Honda dealer. Find out if there's a propane conversion kit for that, Jason.
Okay.
You really need to do that. Gas gensets are just problematic from the get-go.
Okay.
And propane never goes bad, and you could turn off that propane genset for a year and not have to worry about gasoline drying up in there and screwing up everything.
Sounds good.
Yeah, propane's the way to go, and if Honda has a conversion kit, a propane carburetor kit to put on that, that should really give you some peace of mind and have that thing on standby there.
One quick comment. My wife and I have been attending a place for firearms classes called Front Sight. Are you familiar with it?
Oh, they're excellent. They have a great reputation. They got some management problems, but who doesn't?
Yeah.
The great instructors are all highly motivated. Great training. Yeah.
And we're having a real good time learning a lot there, so I would recommend it personally.
Yeah. Front Sight is one of the best. Outside the military and police, that's one of the best places a person could go.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Is that it? Okay. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Well, Jason's doing the right thing there. He's getting professional training from professional instructors. Front Sight is certainly one of the better places that a person could ever hope to get combat-type pistol training in the private sector. And I guess this is Eric back again. Eric from Michigan. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah. Well, I called in because I had never heard of the Edison nickel iron battery until your show.
Okay.
And You gave out, was it ZAPP, ZapWorks?
ZapWorks, with an S, ZapWorks. Rick has a, we all got these computer, these internet links, right? There's a link from my website to Rick's a lot of KT Ordnance, and Rick has a link also to ZapWorks.
Okay. Thing is, I don't have a computer, so I need a number, for instance.
Here's a telephone number. Are you ready to copy?
Yeah, I'm all set.
Okay, 406-834-3611. And call them Monday, Mountain Time, about 10. You're on Central Time, aren't you there, Eric?
Well, Eastern Time, but Mountain.
Eastern. Call them about noon, your time, tomorrow. He's running some pretty late nights. It'd be 10 o'clock his time. He should be back from milking the goats and all that stuff by then. And he can answer all your questions, Eric.
Hey, goats are infinitely better for us than cows.
Absolutely. I think you can make cheese and ice cream out of goat milk also.
The point is, goats have one stomach like we do, same as sheep. Cows have three.
That's right, they do.
The lady who called previously asking about the Native American connection with law enforcement, I had heard that through some covert legislative initiative of Congress and the United Nations and previous treaties that the entire North American landmass is considered to be under the control of the Native American Reservation Tribal Police. And then it was also mentioned that Interpol has always been directed by Nazi folks after World War II. And I was curious, there was an executive order given out, in fact. I didn't get it. But it was something like 120-45, I think it was, if memory serves. But Jack McLam actually gave out that information.
Okay.
At the top.
That's, you know, I'm really not on top of those matters, Eric. If they bubble to the surface a little higher, maybe I'll get with that. But I'm really outside the loop. I am on a first name basis with the chief of the Western Cherokee Nation. He's a friend, and probably a phone call to him, and I'd get more details is all it would take.
Well, great. I hope you do that. I really do. Also, I wanted to bring to your attention, I remember this very startlingly. The hair on my balding head doesn't normally stand up, but when Osama, Obi-Wan, Kenobi, Barack, stated that he and his administration intended to create a national civilian police force of 2 million strong, equal to the military in terms of equipment and training. And I couldn't but reflect on what a Nazi Germany did with. Was it the brown shirts they created as a...
Well, the brown shirts actually preceded Hitler's becoming elected to run the country.
And was it the SS that Hitler created as the homeland?
Well, the SS was... I don't know if they existed before Hitler, but they became his elite troops, right?
And a lady who's a survivor of Nazi Germany, a Jewish lady, stated that Homeland Security in German means SS Schutzstaffel.
Really?
SS is Homeland Security. Yeah,
wow.
And that's what she said. And
well, she should know.
Yeah, and then unsolicited, I didn't even know this guy Tex Mars. Are you familiar with Tex Mars?
Oh, Tex has been around forever. He's done a number of good books. You know.
Oh man, I was astonished to see, and I'm a former Roman Catholic. And in this special newsletter, November of last year, he it's just an astonishing array
But here's what he says. The Pope is calling for a world authority via global government, and also there exists, and the Pope apparently elaborated on the 1,309-page Roman Catholic book addressing homosexual priests practicing the sacred rite of sodomy. And what he's doing here is he says, this is under the heading Devil's Head Soup, Christian Imposters in the House of God. He talks about the devil's doctrines and how Joel Osteen of Houston Lakewood Church is now a big fan of the LDS Mormons Bible, as is a guy by the name of Dr. Lynn Ridenour. It's pretty astonishing. I mean, then they go into the connection, like he says here, this some rabbi by the name of Abner Mikva, and this is a quote from the Chicago Tribune, 12 December 08, Barack Obama will go down in history as America's first Jewish president. And he goes into, Tex Mars goes into the connection here, and he says the scion, S-C-I-O-N, if that's the correct pronunciation, scion of today's Rothschild dynasty, and how this guy, Lord Jacob Rothschild, is the Wizard of Oz behind all these puppets, whether it's the Clintonistas, Colin Powell, John Insane McCain, Nancy Pelosi, and then, of course, Barack Obama.
What's the name of that book there, Eric, again?
Tex
Mars book.
Well, it's a video. Here's what it is. Barack Obama and the Hidden Cabal behind the Plot to Murder America, Rothschild's Choice. This is a special edition. I'm reading right from it. Special edition. 2009 November.
And I guess at Tex Mars website, a person could find that, obviously.
Yeah, its website is conspiracyworld.com, as well as powerofprophecy.com.
Fantastic. Eric, we appreciate your input. Thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Have a good afternoon. And we have a regular caller here, John from Florida. Go ahead, John.
Hello, yes. Two things. You had a previous caller talking about, handing out flyers and small groups. But on your global warming, what the government isn't telling you, I agree, there's 168 hours in a week, and you should not have a group more than 8 to 10 people, adults, and because if it gets too big, and people don't want to listen to this. Now, if you're a business owner, have a small store that sells products, and you can interact with your customers, handing out flyers that way would be okay. You understand what I'm saying?
The whole concept, I didn't want to discourage the young man. Anybody who's got enthusiasm, I don't want to discourage it. We got a break. Hold on, John. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right, we're back to the show. We're back. This is J.R. Moore, getting close to the end of the show. And we got on hold, John from Florida. You still there, John?
Yes, I am. And I'm also looking at your website with the Paratrooper Bicycle and also the Swiss LX. Now, that one's $100 more. That one, and the specifications show different things, even though they're similar. What would be a better, stronger bike?
You'd have to be a real bicycle aficionado to even know what the differences are. They're different mechanisms, different gearing and controls that cost more, but if you just want a simple, reliable bike, the Paratrooper bike's the way to go, really is.
Okay, it shows that the alloy wheels on the Swiss one, so the Paratrooper maybe doesn't have that.
I'd have to look again at them. They're both tough enough to get the job done, and I'd have to look. I don't have the comparisons right here in front of me.
Okay. All right, anyway, but people need to prepare with water filters and stuff, and like I said, it's 8 to 10 people in a group, small group, and if you get any bigger than that, a lot of people don't want to listen to this, so, you know, just
most
go on with
don't.
It.
Most people don't. You know, yeah. Our caller earlier was suggesting a group of 3,000 to 4,000. That's a pretty sized small town. These small communities, from 500 to 2,500, 3,500 people, they have, you know, they all went to high school together. They're related by blood and marriage, a lot of them. And most of the people in town would be on a first name basis with the chief of police, the mayor, the fire chief. The city council, in a tight-knit community like that, they'll stick together and they'll do what they need to do to survive as a community. And that's not a bad place to be. If they're far enough away from a city, if they've got potable water, and if they've got a source of food that can be grown nearby, they should do okay.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. All right,
okay.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. We appreciate the call. We don't know how much time we've got. It's human nature, and I understand it. I've done it myself, searching for dates. Don't get too caught up in that. You need to prepare. You need to prepare now. Get your spiritual preparedness squared away. Get your skills, especially ham radio skills, emergency medical treatment skills. Get your equipment, your emergency medical equipment and supplies, your radios, your supplies in terms of food, medical supplies, everything you need to survive and not be uncomfortable. That's the whole idea. And don't, you know, you don't have to run off to the hills and become a hermit. You do need to make prudent preparations, whatever that is for you. It's your job to figure that out for yourself. It's not my job to tell you. I'd be glad to help you here live on the air, and I do take private consultations. You can see all the information on my website. I'll be doing a private consultation in the state of Washington here in about 7 or 8 weeks. So you're welcome to look at that, too. And, of course, I do out and go out and do speaking engagements and so forth. I'll do what I can to help you all get prepared. And you need to grab the bull by your horns and take charge for your own safety and security and that of your loved ones. Now, while you can, we have what appears to be the luxury of time. That may be a complete illusion. Y'all be safe out there, buy lots of ammunition, and God bless America.
Introducing the new